Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast Between the Sticks. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the chuckling voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Good morning, Matthew. Chuckling?
Yes.
Go on.
Well, it strikes me, right? You are a man that's never too high, never too low, always somewhere in between, always quite level, quite consistent.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment.
You often say staying in state, I believe, don't you?
Absolutely. It's quite important to me, yes.
Is that fair to say?
Yeah, no, it's quite a... that's a fair assessment.
Like, I can't imagine you ever going crazy.
No.
Do you know what I mean? Like, if you're at a party and a banger, it's that time of the night and a banger comes on, I can't imagine you going on the dance floor and just losing your head.
No.
You'd dance, but you'd keep it controlled.
Do you know what a better example might have been? When a centre-back does something ridiculous and you concede a goal because of it. Maybe that's a better example.
Okay.
Or, like a Peter Schmeichel.
Go on.
Well, he went pretty crazy from time to time. But no, I don't really have that in me, I don't think.
You're not really ever... I can't imagine... Conversely, I can't imagine you ever being really upset, really down.
Not really.
It's a World Cup final, for example. England are in the World Cup final. You're away from home. You're in the crowd.
Yeah.
Jordan Pickford or Aaron Ramsdale, I suppose, or Nick Pope.
Yeah.
Sam Johnston.
Dean Henderson.
Name some more.
Yeah.
We'll keep going. Has gone on a mazy run.
Yeah.
He's taken on one. He's taken on two. It's the last minute. And he rifles one into the top corner to see England win the World Cup for the first time since 1966. Now, in that moment, most people lose their heads.
Yep.
Uncontrollable emotion, and often you just start running. You don't know why you're running and you don't know where you're running to, but you just run because you don't know what else to do with yourself. You would probably just stand up and clap.
Wow. Well, no, I think for a start, I'd question the situation. Why is he up there in the first place? Why is he taking on? So I'd probably think I'm asleep. Probably would be asleep, because what you've just described is not very likely. But yes, if it did happen. No, do you know what? When Jordan Pickford saved the penalty against Jorginho, I want to say it was, in the Euro final, I did jump up and celebrate.
Okay.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have seen that.
It was a reasonably controlled celebration.
Right, muted celebration.
Yes, it was a yes. Go on, Jordan.
Well, the reason I bring this up is because I believe I may have found, not your weak spot, but there's something very surprising about this.
I know where this is going.
Over the past few weeks, I've discovered that if anything makes you chuckle, makes you laugh, makes you lose yourself, it's the TV show Would I Lie to You?
Love it.
I've come down and you are chortling away on the sofa.
It's one of my favourite things in the world.
So where has this come from?
I have no idea. I just really enjoy lying there with a glass of wine and watching Would I Lie to You?
I mean, you're a goner.
Oh, it's the best show on TV. I could watch countless episodes. I watched the ones I've watched before, and I still laugh just as hard the second time round.
Oh, the planner's full. What's going on? Oh my gosh, there's 50 episodes of Would I Lie to You? Where are these?
You know, I'll tell you where people can relate. You must have, or not must have, but people that watch Friends all the time. Like, that was a classic one for years. It was on every single channel going, and there would be an episode. You've seen it seven times, you watch it again. That's my equivalent. I have Would I Lie to You on pretty much on repeat. For whatever reason, I really enjoy that show. And yes, that, I don't know what it is. Maybe it is just the fact that in that moment, when they're taking you on a journey, telling stories, maybe it's that. Maybe it's the storytelling that I enjoy. I don't know, but it does it for me.
Well, let's bring that back to goalkeeping.
How?
Come on, what have you got here? The journey, the storytelling, the talking until you're blue in the face about something that's not true. I don't know, trying to convince somebody something else.
Yeah.
Getting into their psyche.
Okay.
Can that come back to goalkeeping?
I mean, it could come back to Glenn Hoddle's punditry. I think it's a lie, Glenn. I think it's a lie. It is, in fact, true. Is it, Glenn? Is that right, Glenn? Excellent. Thank you.
Very well done.
Thank
well, that's
you.
A little teaser, isn't it?
Oh, my
of
God.
What's to come.
Well, we're just turning... The problem is, I think we just need to rename the podcast Commentary Corner. Just forget Between the Sticks. I think it's just Commentary Corner now, because it's getting worse and worse, Matthew. I thought it was improving slightly. We had a few golden weeks with Ali McCoist and a couple of other bits. And now the rest of them, they've crept back. They've somehow got themselves back into a position of passing opinion.
Well, plenty coming up, including that, a couple of emails to Clean Sheet Club, Keeper Capers, GKPI, all the good stuff. Shall we get on with it?
Let's do it.
Just before we get into the show, Richard, a quick bit of admin you'd like to speak of?
Yes, absolutely. And it's to ask for the generosity of our many listeners, thousands of listeners all over the world, tens of listeners all over the world. But we are very grateful that you're listening in. Look, we love doing this. We've done it now pretty much every week religiously for several years. We fully intend to do it for many, many years to come. Naturally, it becomes more and more difficult. There are production costs. Of course, it does take quite a lot of time. So we are asking for anybody who's willing and open to showing a bit of generosity and is happy to contribute towards what we do, then they can do so. So it is via Patreon, which we have used previously. It won't be one where we'll necessarily put out any extra content or anything like that. It is to help with Between the Sticks, to help with our regular feature interviews that we do and the other bits and pieces as well. So if you do want to help, by all means, please do go to the website, which is
patreon.com/goalkeepersunion.
There Richard. You go. And there's a few different options as to how you can help us out. And as I say, anything that you guys can do is very, very much appreciated.
Good words.
Thank you.
Good words. And yes, Patreon obviously was a platform that we started initially in lockdown with the idea of producing extra exclusive content. We did start with that, but unfortunately, things just got a bit busy, didn't they? For both of us.
Life takes over.
Life does take over. So as much as we'd like to still produce that exclusive content, we don't want to continue making promises we can't keep, I suppose.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go. But one promise we can keep is Between the Sticks.
Absolutely. That's there. And those podcasts, if you are a Patreon member, will always go on Patreon first. So our Between the Sticks goes on earlier in the day. Our interviews go on a day before. So you will get a little bit of exclusivity.
Absolutely.
Apart from that, you're just part of the Goalkeepers Union, which ultimately is what we all want.
Absolutely. It's growing.
It is indeed. So like Richard just said, any help is greatly appreciated. Head on over to patreon.com/goalkeepersunion. Okay, we're back.
We are.
We're back. We're going to start at Old Trafford. Manchester United 1, Southampton 1. And we're going to start on a high. So Fraser Forster, yes. 7 saves, strong, commanding and confident. Started the move for the equaliser too. What a pass.
He did a lovely little left foot ping. Really good, actually, because he took a touch that wasn't so good. Mm. And you kind of felt, oh, he's in a bit of trouble here. But then just really calmed himself down. Really nice lesson, this, for younger goalkeepers listening in. Because how often does that happen? Your first touch isn't quite where you'd want it to be. But then it's having the ability, the awareness of mind to then calm yourself down and make sure that your next contribution is a good one. And in fairness to him, brilliant pass out to the left winger with his left foot. Just clipped out to the left winger, very calm. And as you say, it did start the move. And other than that, very, very good performance. Fraser Forster's one for me, and I know we spoke about him several times on the podcast, but and I want this to come across in the right way. He doesn't always look the most aesthetically pleasing. And I think this, for me, he's probably, and I'm sure this is still the case, one of the most effective goalkeepers in the Premier League. And, you know, he won Goalkeeper of the Month, didn't he, a few years ago. And he was very much in and around the England reckoning for quite some time. And you actually look at, in terms of his output, the amount of saves that he makes, the way in which he plays the game, very intelligent the way he plays the game. A couple of these saves in particular, you see his movement on the free kick where he drops back to his line, sets himself on his line, body weight forward, great save down to his left, used every inch of that frame of his, very powerful, etc., etc. But whereas maybe a De Gea will do it with a bit more fluidity or the fact that he is a different build, it just looks a little bit different. I don't know if that necessarily makes sense, but then you'll get the situation, for instance, where he actually makes a very good save with his feet, but literally just kicks it away. And again, you look and it doesn't look fantastic. It's not one where he's collapsing on it or he's, you know, saving it with his feet, but he's collapsing in such a way that it looks dramatic in any way. He just simplifies the game. He plays in such a way where he keeps it so simple, makes everything look so easy. Even that save down to his left, which by the way is a world-class save, he made look really simple because of the way in which he's positioned himself, dropped, body weight forward, gets down to his left, good big parry as well into a very safe area and just makes it look so simple. But once again, a very good performance, playing with real confidence. You could see at the end, there was a moment where he's kind of tempted one of the strikers in to take the ball off him. But you could just see he's playing with a smile and he really enjoyed the afternoon.
That one with his feet was brilliant because that was a classic John Smith. Yeah. Have it. Get out. Just get out of my 6-yard box, you. But it goes back, doesn't it, to the whole idea that there is no save, which is unorthodox. So in that scenario, if that was you standing there, would you have not kicked it away? Would you have collected it in a different
capacity? No, I think it's probably a similar result, because I don't think he gets a chance to get down and make the save with his hands. I think he's set in such a way that it's either going to be a ball that's a little bit higher and he makes a reaction save, if you watch the way he's set, or it's a bit lower and you have to save with his feet. Now, he's made the quick decision that he's got just about enough time to get some distance on the kick. Rather than just blocking it with his feet and the ball dropping 2 or 3 yards away, which is dangerous, he's got the awareness of mind to swing his leg and manage to get it 30, 40 yards away and the danger's over. But of course, you look at it, and I go back to that in that it's one of the things that fascinates me most about goalkeeping is that there isn't much statistical analysis that is that accurate. Yeah, we've got expected goals against, but other than that, there's not loads. So a lot of it is based on opinion. It's based on what you see. And naturally, you'll see David De Gea make a fantastic save in the top corner and the athleticism, the dynamism, the power, etc., etc. Whereas Fraser Forster may make the exact same save, but won't necessarily make it with the same panache. Is that the word? So in terms of being effective, he's up there for me. He always has been, you know, and I think not so long ago, certainly that was valued in a big, big way. Now, I know that he's been a number two for a period of time, so he's been out the spotlight a little bit, but it's nice to see games like this where he is getting the credit that he deserves, because I think it's fair to say that he hasn't always got that.
Maybe he will be the goalkeeper dribbling into the opposition half and pinging one into the top corner.
Maybe.
So Paul Scholes gave him credit for that, which was nice to hear. Mm. But then the analysis turned to David De Gea, and I can't believe it, but I've got to press this button.
Commentary corner.
So it was the equaliser scored by Shea Adams and Glenn Hoddle after the game. Now, I don't think I've heard anyone else come even close to suggesting that this was an error on the part of David De Gea. I think it was Martin Keown on commentary, great finish. Everyone else seems to have said it's a great finish. So when I was listening to Glenn Hoddle, I was thinking, does he have a point here? Which goes back to right at the beginning, would I lie to you? I was thinking, I need to double check with Rich here because has he got a point? So Glenn Hoddle on the goal. Shall I read it out?
No, go on.
It's a really good finish. And I thought to myself, he must have curled that round De Gea until I saw it again. What De Gea's going again with his feet for in those circumstances, I do not know. If he lays down and goes across like he, look, now he makes a lot of good saves with his feet, De Gea, from reactions from about 6 yard box if it's a corner. What on earth is he going with his feet for from that angle? I do not understand that as a goalkeeper. If he lays down, he has a nap, just goes for a quick sleep,
just lie down.
Quick 40 winks. If he lays down, he lays his legs on the near post and goes across, he saves it.
It just made me think of that song. Was like, oh, sit down, oh, sit down. Lay down next to me. What? Just need to lie down.
And with it as well, they did the classic thing where he's put his arms
out. Put his hands out.
He's
look,
just
see?
Thinking, there you go. If he just puts his arms out like that,
and
he
lies
saves
down.
It.
Just literally, arms out, lie down. What are you doing, De Gea? Lie down. Oh, yeah, this was a real tough listen. And he just kept digging the hole deeper and deeper. Yeah, look, okay, look, in terms of analysis on this moment for me, it's, look, De Gea's obviously felt in that moment he's got close enough that it's a De Gea technique. We've spoken about this before as well, and that I'm not saying that goalkeepers don't go with their hands there, because a lot do, but this comes back to the technique that you choose to adopt. Now, De Gea tends to get close enough that he then sets in such a way where anything above waist height, he will, of course, go with his hands. Anything below, he goes with his feet. And he reacts quite quickly, ordinarily, and covers a large part of the goal, which was the case here, because the ball's hit the post. And it's gone back across the goal and pretty much hit the other post before going into the goal. It was as precise of a finish you could possibly get. And it wasn't like it was a really acute angle. That's the other bit. The way they're talking was like he's down by the corner flag somewhere and managed to squeeze it in. No, he's not that far off being central. So just bizarre punditry. But no, De Gea's got close enough in his opinion to then set in the way he does and spread in the way he does. Get his leg full stretch, just misses it with his leg and it ends up hitting the post and going in. So again, could he go on with the hands? Of course he could, but it's just not the technique that De Gea tends to opt to use in the same way that many others don't. So just bizarre punditry. The annoying thing was as well is that then they turned to Scholes and Scholes just agreed. Yeah, I do.
Could have caught it, I think he said.
Yeah, actually, you know, look at it again. Yeah, probably could have caught it. By the way, let's not forget, they're watching this in super slow motion. So, of course, when you watch it in super slow motion, it looks terrible. He should just lie down. I mean, he's got ages. He's got ages. He could walk across and pick it up. I mean, yeah, very, very tough listen.
I don't enjoy it because it's not what we want to hear, but I also take a little bit of enjoyment out of it just because of how ridiculous it is. And it gives us something to talk about, and it makes you not stay in state. Look at you.
There you go. Look, boiling. I can feel my heart. Do you know, I'm going to bring up my Whoop again that I still wear. And I know this, I actually did check this not so long ago. I checked my heart rate during these podcasts and it does increase.
Does it really?
It does increase, yes.
Okay, well, let's move on from that. Just quickly on De Gea. He put out a tweet after the game. Just like to get your thoughts on this, where he said, the situation needs to improve and fast. We have to learn that this is not enough. Which I thought was an interesting tweet to put out because he's posted it with a picture of himself and then he's tagged Manchester United in the tweet as well.
Mm.
Bit different. I kind of feel like that's the kind of tweet you put out just as words. You don't put an accompanying picture because what kind of picture do you choose? He's kind of got one that's slightly in the middle where he's not looking too happy. He's quite pensive whilst he's collecting the ball. So he's thought about this.
Yeah. I mean, I ordinarily it will be a company that advises what needs to go out. I mean, I don't think this is brilliant for several reasons, just for the fact I don't think it's written fantastically well. Like, you know, we need to learn this is not good enough. I'm sure a lot of fans are probably then thinking, well, how do you not know that's not good enough already? You know, so I think look, I would advise a lot of the lads to use companies because I think as long as they are in touch with the fans and they know the kind of messages that you should be putting out, then I think it's worthwhile because the communication that you put out is effectively your own advertising, especially now with social media. You get to get across an idea as to who you are, but then also you want to build that connection with the fans. Of course you do. So, yeah, I didn't think it was the best tweet, more for that than anything. I just didn't think it was worded brilliantly. But I'm pretty confident it will be a company that he uses, and that's what they thought would have been the best thing to put out at that particular time.
So to use companies and have just other people tweet, we know this happens, of course, but it's almost like it's becoming transparent now that players are like, yeah, other people do my Twitter.
Well, the whole thing is, it's advertising. Like, if you look at each player as being a small business, which effectively they are, the amount of money that each player earns are a small business. So every small business has marketing. And the biggest form of marketing for any player is their social media, because they've got millions, literally millions in this case, of people that are looking at every tweet, every Instagram message you put out. So why would you do it yourself if you're not particularly good at branding yourself? Now, look, and he might do it himself, which if he does, I personally would recommend he didn't, because I think that the whole idea is you get somebody who is very skilled in that domain so that you can give a really good idea as to what you want to be. And by the way, this is not me saying that, because you need to give an idea as to who you are. I think that is important. I know you're a big fan of Juan Mata, for instance, because of that sort of feel that he gives, and he really gives an idea as to who he is. But I think unless you are skilled in that domain, then no, for me, you are a small business. You're trying to maximize your career. You're getting to the very top of wherever it is you want to be. So personally, I recommend that you have someone that can help you communicate to the fans in the best possible way and help build that bond even further, which I know is kind of almost goes against the idea of building the bond because you're using the company. But imagine if you're doing it yourself and you're not particularly, most lads aren't brilliant when it comes to communication, when it comes to putting messages out there. They're not skilled in that. Of course they're not. They've focused on their football career as much as they have. So they'll want to put out a really nice heartfelt message. But a lot of the time they just get the tone wrong. And it's not because they're bad people or because they want to put out something silly, but it's just not their skill set in the way that we all miscommunicate all the time because it's not something we learn in school for a lot of people. So that's why I advise it. And I know a lot of people disagree with that, but I think the whole point is if you want to put yourself across in the public domain and give an idea as to who you want to be or want to be portrayed as, then yeah, ideally find someone who can help you do that.
I just don't think I could relinquish that control of what is essentially my responsibility.
You're quite skilled linguistically, Matthew. So I think like this is something that, in fairness, I would recommend they come to someone like you and get them help. So for instance, would you have advised David De Gea to put out that message?
No, probably not.
No, there you go. So if they'd have come to you, you'd have been like, okay, David, do you know how this might be portrayed? It's going to look a bit like, people are going to respond and be like, how have you not learned that yet. And I had a quick flick through some of the responses. And of course, there's then a few after listening to Glenn Hoddle and Paul Scholes, will be a few that will then get on him because of, you know, the fact he didn't go with his hands, according to you know, Glenn Hoddle's analysis. Then you've got the people that are asking the question, like, how have you not learned this already? You know, it's just not a particularly good thing. Now, look, it's minor in the grand scheme of things in terms of his brand. But if he's coming to you, you could then ask him these questions to be, okay, what is it you want to get across there? What is it? Basically, you want to say that this wasn't good enough. That's what you want to say. And that you want the fans to know that it will improve. And you guys are doing absolutely everything you can to ensure that it will improve and Manchester United will be where they were however many years ago. That's what we want to say, isn't it? Yeah, that's exactly. Okay, right. Well, let's work with you on that so we can get that message across, because what you just put across is not that.
Well, David, if you're listening, which I'm sure you are.
Does that make sense?
No, like, of course it does.
This is your domain.
I absolutely get what you're saying. Yeah, I guess it comes back to social media, doesn't it? And sometimes you think, just don't say anything. No. Just don't even have it. No. And then you won't have the problem to face.
True, but then it's the same way in that, yeah, okay, Nike, Adidas, like, don't advertise. They can get the adverts wrong, and they sometimes do, but a lot of the time, they use experts to get the adverts across in the way they want. So I'd always advise lads to use it, but yeah, get advice. In the same way that you learn anything in life, you learn to be a better goalkeeper. Either go on a social media course or a communication course and become really good yourself, or find someone who can help you get yourself across in the way that you want to.
Okay. Well, we'll move on from this. Good chat, by the way. We could probably talk about this for a long time. We'll mention his saves as well in midweek, because I think these are worth flagging up. Plenty of action in midweek. We won't go over all of that ground, but the game between Burnley and Manchester United, he made one corker of a stop in wet conditions.
Unbelievable.
From Wout Weghorst.
I've got that down potentially as save of the season so far.
Really?
Just a brilliant, brilliant save. Just the athleticism, the power, the speed at which he gets to his right-hand side. And this, actually, going back to the Glenn Hoddle comment, look, he does use his hands. Of course he does. But he'll do it in situations when the ball is that little bit further away. At that point, he's set in such a way where he is very much going to go with his hands wherever it goes. And this is a great example. Takes up a brilliant position, true position, about maybe 3 yards or so from goal. So reasonably advanced, but obviously not too advanced, because the strike starts outside the post. It's arcing back in, almost hit with the outside of the boot, struck perfectly. And this should be in the bottom corner. You shouldn't have any right to save this. But this is David De Gea, the very best of David De Gea, the quick step that he gets in, the explosive spring, so quick to his right-hand side, and then to judge it off the bounce, get enough of a hand to get it around the post. Just a splendid save.
And this segues nicely, because it was Burnley 1, Manchester United 1, and at the weekend, Burnley 0, Liverpool 1. Wout Weghorst, we mentioned there, who had the shot that was saved by De Gea, seemingly the latest player with a case of Alissonitis, I'm going to call this.
Yeah, I mean, look, Alisson, we have to say, when it comes to one-on-ones, I think the whole sort of game of cat and mouse, he's very good. Very, very good. You know, you watch him, he'll hang back, then suddenly he'll come, then he'll hold, then he moves with the player as a player ordinarily tries to go round, or in this case, a player tries to dink him. He doesn't go to ground too early. I just think he's very intelligent in these situations. And you're right, you see, and this is where, and I've said it before about like a player missing a penalty, I would always give the goalkeeper some credit. In the same way that a player misses a one-on-one, I would always give the goalkeeper some credit, because the player is going to do something according to what the goalkeeper's doing. You know, if the goalkeeper hangs back and is very, very deep, they'll bring it that little bit further before looking to finish. If the goalkeeper's too advanced, they might take it round in order to finish. And I think this is where Alisson's very good, in that he'll hold and he knows the moment to come, and he ordinarily gets close enough to make it very difficult. Or if he doesn't feel he can get close enough, then he will just hold and turn it into a shot-stopping situation. I just think, yeah, that cat and mouse, I think any young goalkeeper, if you're looking at one-on-ones and how you can be the best you can possibly be in that situation, definitely watch Alisson.
And Nick Pope, strong in that game like he was against United. There was a save in that game against Liverpool, which is classic Pope for me. You know, the ones where he just stands and it just hits his chest. He's just upright, he's strong, barely moves, just throws a shoulder out. Mm. Great save. And then the one from Edinson Cavani. Brilliant. In the game against Manchester United. What a save that was.
Brilliant. And I think the commentary on the one that Pope made was like, you know, along the lines of him not having to move. But this goes back to what we speak of so often, taking up a good position, a real solid position in terms of the way in which he sets. He looks so strong in that moment. And it's the awareness as well, not to try. You see, maybe goalkeepers might panic and go with their hands, and you know, you move the body in a big way in order to try and get your hand up to the ball, but having the awareness that no, this is going to hit me, you know, it's going to hit my shoulder, it's going to hit my chest, and just to stand tall, allow it to happen, and then react off the next ball. You know, and I think credit to Pope for that, because I don't think a lot of goalkeepers have that ability. And then, as you say, the save, certainly from Cavani, where brilliant movement. I mean, this is one of those situations where it's lost, it's a goal. And a lot of goalkeepers turn, see Cavani, and probably give up on the situation. But you can see the determination as he turns, sprints across so quickly, throws himself, so brave. And again, one of the saves of the season. Brilliant save.
Okay, three more bits before we finish on Tottenham and Wolves. Firstly, Angus Gunn up against his old club for Norwich against Manchester City saved that Raheem Sterling penalty. Very unlucky as Sterling tapped in the rebound. Ian Melier conceded three against Everton but made what I would say is a save of the weekend contender from Solomon Rondon. And Ben Foster conceded two for Watford in their defeat to Brighton, but a lovely bit of goalkeeping nearly set up a goal.
He did, yeah, and I thought Ben was very good again. And to be honest, obviously things not looking good for my old boys at Vicarage Road, but certainly Ben, you know, it's turning into another very solid season for him. It'll be fascinating to see what he does as a next step. But it was a great take at the far post. Again, it's the kind of thing that might go unnoticed, but just really good footwork. And you see where he actually takes the cross. He's pretty much on the corner of the six-yard box. And then the awareness to set off the quick attack with the side volley. So no, very good. Ian Melier, as you mentioned, brilliant save. Doesn't count for a lot, or doesn't seemingly count for much when you're three down, but the speed of reactions to get back to his left hand side on the volley to get a big firm hand over the bar, just yeah, an excellent save. This is the kind of one that if they win the game 1-0 and he makes his save late on, this is up there with the, I don't know, the Aaron Ramsdale save against Leicester. You know, when you win the game, of course, it just gets remembered that bit more. It was a truly great save, but unfortunately going down 3-0. And then Angus Gunn, as you mentioned, not a great deal more he could have done. Read the penalty, got himself right across to the left-hand side. Really powerful dive on the penalty. And if anything, how often do you see that where you arguably dive a little bit too far? And the problem being is when you parry back from where it came. And of course, there's Sterling to tap in the rebound.
So let's finish on Tottenham and Wolves. They lost at home Spurs 2-Wolves 2-0. Now, Hugo Lloris called into question by Jermaine Genus on Match of the Day 2. Also by the commentator on that game, Martin Fisher. Both were scathing. Fisher also complimentary on Lloris. What's your take on the two goals conceded and his performance as a whole?
Yeah, it was a tough day. The conditions looked atrocious first and foremost, but it was a tough day for him. And it's more one moment for me that just suggested that it wasn't the usual calm Hugo Lloris that we see. So the initial goal, he makes a save to his left-hand side, which in itself was okay. He didn't quite parry into the area that he'd want to parry into. You can see the ball's moved a little bit. It's pitched in front of him. He's decided to parry, which I think is absolutely fine in those conditions. Makes sense. Didn't quite get the angle on the parry, but again, not disastrous. He's got the ball away from danger. It's then the follow-up, and the only thing I can think is that he's not aware that the person next to him is one of his players, because it is a really odd decision to go with the punch, whereas I think he probably can hold it. If he knows it's one of his players, he probably dives and looks to hold it, or potentially even leaves it for the player on the line to clear, which would have been a bit riskier. But in that moment, I can only imagine that he's got up from the initial save to his left. He's a bit disorientated. He's seen the ball break. He's seen a man to his right-hand side, and he's just thought, I just need to get this away from danger. And so I use the word panic because it did feel a bit like that. Like he's tried to get there as quick as he can, thinking he's going to be challenged, and just tries to punch it away. Of course, when you look at it again and realise it's one of your own players and you've effectively, punched the ball when you could have held it, and then they followed up with a rebound, then the culmination of the save, the punch leading to the goal, it doesn't look good. And it's one that I'm sure he'll hold his hands up. And then the reason I say that as well is then even the following goal, which, again, on another day, it's not noticed because you play the ball out to the centre back and he clears it down the line and it's danger over. But the pass itself, he doesn't quite connect with the pass. It's just a bit sloppy behind the centre back. So it just didn't look like he was quite with the game. And we've all had those. Again, goalkeepers listening in, we've all had those where you start a game and you just don't quite feel with it fully. You're not quite connected to the game. You're not in flow state. You talk about state again. You're not quite in the flow, in the zone. And it can take a bit of time to get into that state of mind. And he certainly looked for the first 25, 30 minutes or so that he wasn't really there. But then after that, he was actually very good. If you look at the last 60 odd minutes of the game, there was a lot to really like about it. A couple of great saves, good save one-on-one, big save down to his right-hand side, good save mid-height right-hand side as well. But yeah, that first 20, 25 minutes, it was a tough start to the game.
Yeah, funny one. I think the player that was next to him for that first goal, I think it was Davinson Sanchez, which does feed into what was good about the analysis from Genus in the lack of communication, it seems like, between Lloris and Sanchez. Not the rest of his defence, but just Sanchez, who had a stinker. And maybe it was just an off day for the pair of them. But the second goal, the pass obviously wasn't the pass that he intended, but I think it was Raul Jimenez who was pressing Ben Davies. If he'd played in front of Ben Davies, Ben Davies has to probably release straight away and might have fluffed that. The pass has obviously gone behind him, but from that moment on, a lot goes wrong before the ball goes into the net. Yes, you could say the pass was the catalyst, but even Ben Davies there, he can get more distance on the clearance. He can go twos with Sessegnon, I think, who was to the left of him, and then clear it or feed it into midfield. But he didn't. It was his pass that was terrible that went straight to the Wolves midfielder or attacker. And then, like I said, a whole load of crap happens before the ball gets into the net.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, I agree entirely. And that's where I think sometimes when it isn't your day, those things do end up in a goal. Because, yeah, look, if that doesn't end up in the net, then actually he comes away with, yeah, there'd be question marks over the goal, but it doesn't then turn into what the commentators were describing it to be. Interestingly, I went to watch Swansea versus Bristol City at the weekend. There's a good example, actually, where Andy Fisher, who was very solid throughout, had a really good game, but there was one moment where he's gone to clear a ball and scuffed his clearance, which then fell to the striker, and really the striker should score. The moment the striker doesn't, Swansea go on, win the game 3-1. I'm looking in the papers, he's getting sevens, eights, and it's forgotten. But you can imagine they'd have scored that, which at the time I think would have put them 2-1 up, and they end up losing the game to Bristol City, then he's coming out with a three. You know, so that's just, I guess there's an example there where sometimes you can do exactly the same thing and get a completely different result. In this case, look, it wasn't a good pass, but it wasn't disastrous. It was still safe side of the defender. And if the defender actually does clear it in the way that he intends, then this is forgotten in a heartbeat. But the moment he doesn't, then of course you start looking back throughout the sequence of play. And that's where you come back to that initial pass from Lloris. And of course, that's why he's got some criticism.
We'll finish the Premier League on a positive. We've had an email in. Let's talk about Jose Sarr. Another good performance from him in this game. Another clean sheet. And Lee Madden has emailed us in and said, "Hey chaps, great show. Just watching the Wolves-Arsenal game." This was in midweek, of course. "And how on earth," and he's put that in capitals, "how on earth is that first goal not a foul on Jose Sarr? At the very best, Lacazette surely impedes him from getting the ball and is possibly a dangerous tackle. Am I being overreactionary? To me, it just seemed a cut and dry foul on the goalkeeper and I can't understand why it was allowed."
Yeah, I agree. I think this also then comes back to I suppose conversations we had previously about where outfield players will look at it from their point of view. So pundits won't necessarily consider this, but the moment he's going for the ball and who is the opposing player in this situation? Sorry?
It was Lacazette.
Lacazette, that's right. So the moment that Lacazette has also gone for it, hasn't got it, but collided into Sarr in the way he did, and it wasn't just collide, he's really clattered into him, then yeah, it's a foul. But again, no one's going to see it from that point of view, because I'm assuming that Lee's looking at it from the point of view of being, well, either a Wolves supporter or possibly a goalkeeper. Then you can fully appreciate what's happened in that moment where you're going for it, you get clattered, you can't therefore gather the ball, and therefore it should be a foul. But again, we see it from that point of view because we're goalkeepers and we see it from Jose Sarr. But look, on a positive, you know, it has to be said, and again, once again in the game at the weekend, he really is going from strength to strength. You know, when you look early on, he had reasonably big shoes to fill in the shape of Patricio, who was it's fair to say, was liked, well-liked, and certainly had a good couple of years with Wolves. But now he's certainly taken things to another level for me. And a few of the saves in particular over the last couple of games, very, very good. The one on the angle, I think it was against Arsenal, I think, during the week, where that one where it comes in on the angle, and you just see the way in which he moves across the goal, gets himself set in the perfect position. The ball's then going through his legs. One of the toughest things you can do as a goalkeeper to try and save that ball through your legs. But the way he just collapses a knee, just very elastic is probably the word I'd use in the way in which he moves. You know, I've mentioned David De Gea a lot in this podcast. Kind of similarities to that, where it's, you know, you see some goalkeepers, you just don't feel they've got the ability to move their limbs in that way almost. But he just seems to move really fluidly, very, very powerful, strong, quick. Yeah, I really like what I see.
It is the EFL overview. We'll start in the Championship, where Ryan Allsopp, not really having a bad day for him personally, I don't think, for Derby, but four conceded. Derby soundly beaten at Middlesbrough, but I think you could say the defence did him no favours whatsoever in that one. A mad game at Bloomfield Road, Blackpool in the ascendancy against Bournemouth. Dan Grimshaw, a penalty save from Dom Solanke, but two late goals conceded there. Perhaps we'll talk about the last one from Sirike Dembele. Carl Hine now in for Reading. The rot hasn't stopped though. Lost at home to Coventry without a win since November the 27th. And an interesting incident between Huddersfield and Sheffield United. Huddersfield thought they'd scored. It was disallowed. Not exactly sure what it was for. Danny Ward a foul on Wes Fodderingham, but perhaps offside too.
Yes. Where do we start? So yeah, Ryan Allsopp, again, from a personal point of view, another very good display. And I felt a bit for him, actually, because the commentator did question whether he could have done more on one in particular where he's passed out to his defender and the defender then loses the ball when he was put under incredible pressure. But seemed very harsh because I thought actually Ryan Allsopp's part in that particular play was faultless. But again, several saves, building a fantastic season for Derby, and certainly a big reason as to why they've got the opportunity of getting out of trouble that they have got. Made a very good save down to his left-hand side, fingertips round the post. Good reaction save as well in a one-on-one, so not a great deal more he could have done. Daniel Grimshaw, as you mentioned, good penalty save. One of these where the player taking the penalty waits for you to move, but he waited, and then went the right way. Again, I think the commentator said he fell the right way, so good fall. Well done, Daniel. Carl Hine, big save low to his right. Of course, a big opportunity for him now, getting some Championship football. Not a great deal he could have done with the goal. Certainly felt for him on the deflected effort that went over his head. Just couldn't quite move his feet quickly enough. I'm not sure he'd have been able to do much, even if he had off. And Bree Samba, we didn't mention Bree Samba, or is that, are we going to mention him in a minute? Okay, we need to talk about Bree Samba. But yes, Lee Nichols, a couple of very good saves. One in particular, full stretch to his left-hand side onto the post. And again, he is building a fantastic season. The amount of positivity that surrounds him, arguably one of the signings of the summer, I think, when it comes to goalkeepers. Brilliant, brilliant season. Great save to his left-hand side. And yes, where's Fodderingham? Which it was, and again, I think, what it was given for, I'm not entirely sure, but either, well, Wes Fodderingham technically was fouled. I do get the fact that the lad was fouled before Wes Fodderingham, but again, I'm just looking at it purely from a goalkeeping perspective, which is Wes Fodderingham corner comes in, he's then gone to turn to take up his position, and of course he's tripped over the guy that's there. Kind of reminds me of like old school when you're the school playground. Do you ever used to do that where someone would be stood up, and it happened to me several times. Someone would then come and kneel behind you and someone would just push you, just to push you over. It kind of felt a bit like that, like someone's there kneeling behind Wes Fodderingham and he's just fallen over him. So it is a foul on Wes Fodderingham, but yes, I do appreciate it's probably a foul on the guy before that. Maybe it's offside. I don't know. But from Wes Fodderingham's point of view, it did stop him from making the save.
That happened to you several times. So are you saying you were more the victim than the culprit in this case on
Definitely.
The playground?
I am full of positive energy. I was one being bullied, certainly not the bully.
Now, did you say you wanted to talk about Bree Samba?
I think we should.
Okay, we'll have one of these.
Bada boom, bada bing. It's only a keeper caper.
So, something happened at the City Ground at the weekend. I'm not sure what happened. We'll have to ask Mr. Samba. But Phil Jagielka ended up on the floor and Samba ended up in the showers.
He did.
Early doors.
He did. And an outfield player went in goal for a penalty. It was, bizarre. I mean, he got very, very angry in this moment. Now, I don't know exactly what's happened, but I mean, the thing is, on a serious note, he's given himself a bit of a problem now, Bree Samba, because, of course, it will give an opportunity to Ethan Horvath over the next three games, because, of course, it's a three-game suspension for a sending off like this. But for those that haven't seen it, effectively, he's gathered the ball, running towards the edge of the box, ready to distribute. I think the lad's maybe stopping him from distributing quickly.
He's given him a quick shove.
Quick shove?
Yeah.
So Bree just punches him in the head. why wouldn't you? I mean, in that moment, you know, you're very annoyed. I want to distribute the ball, so have that. There you go. And then he's baffled as to how the referee could possibly send him off, give a penalty. And at this stage, this was 1-1 with about 2 minutes of the game left to go as well. So, yeah, I can imagine the words that were shared afterwards weren't particularly positive. Luckily for Brees and Nottingham Forest, they did get an equaliser in the very last minute. So maybe that would have saved him ever so slightly. But yeah, certainly after something like this, it's the kind of thing, as we've seen at Port Vale, good example. Kovalan hasn't had a look in since. Of course, Thomas Holy's played every game since. You do just wonder whether this might give an opportunity to Ethan Horvath.
No one wants to see another individual punched in the head, right? We don't want to see that, and we do not condone it. But this was hilarious. You can't help but chuckle when you see it, because what is he doing? And like you said, the reaction there, the fact that he is perplexed at the referee, can't quite grasp why he's seeing a red card, but it's the reaction from his teammates, from the Nottingham Forest players that are like, what the hell are you just doing? I think Jack Colback even went up to Jagielka to say, are you okay?
Yeah.
What just happened here? Are you all right? But let's talk about Joe Worrell in goal, desperately trying to save the penalty by advancing a fair few yards off his line.
Yeah, he did. He did the classic thing, just ran out to the person taking it. I mean, the technique on the dive wasn't atrocious. He's given it a decent go, but credit. You got to give credit to the taker here, because I do think it must be a bit odd where you're taking a penalty against an outfield player. Like the ordinarily, I know it's what, you've got an 80% chance of scoring a penalty or something like that. The moment you know you're taking it against an outfield player, that must then become 99. You know, they shouldn't save the penalty. But then the amount of pressure that puts on the taker, knowing that you absolutely have to score now, you've got a lad in goal that's probably never put a pair of gloves on before. So, yeah, but in credit to him, it was actually a really good penalty that probably would have scored anyway.
Okay, into League One. Another near penalty save. Dimitar Mitov close to the Panenka from Yasana Hadme. Cambridge drawing at Burton. Josh Griffiths of Lincoln. Important late save to keep the spoils shared. That was a great save from Sam Vokes of Wickham. One apiece there. The same two could be said of Aaron Chapman. Three big saves in a basement battle draw between Gillingham and Morecambe. The best of the bunch from John Obika. And Tony Savin letting one slip just under his foot for Crewe's consolation at Accrington, but no big deal. They won 4-1. Does not matter.
Which goes back to what we said before about Ian Melier and a couple of other examples. This will be forgotten in a heartbeat. I mean, it didn't help in the players. The defenders got close to him and decided to pass it back to him, which he wasn't expecting. And as you say, wasn't able to control it, and they've ended up scoring. But when you're 4-0 up, yeah, I can't imagine much would have been said after the game, and you move on and you forget it. And I guess that's the part of goalkeeping that is completely out of your control. You can only do whatever you do in a game, and sometimes it'll be things that happen outside of what you do that dictate how you are seen and how you are judged the next day. So in this case, didn't mean much. They won the game comfortably, so it'll be very quickly forgotten. And just to mention a couple of other things you spoke about there. Good top-hand save from Josh Griffiths. Chapman, yeah, a couple of very big saves, in particular the one right in the last minute, just when Morecambe had equalised to make the save. Good reaction save to his right-hand side, top hand. Very good from him. And Ben Killip, did Ben Killip get a touch to this in the top corner? If he did, then it was an excellent save, because this is arrowing, it looks like, into the top corner, and he gets himself up, and I think he does get fingertips. We haven't spoke about this, have we?
We didn't know, because that's League Two, Richard, which we'll get into in a minute.
See, I just thought we just accumulated all of them now. See, but it just shows I've done my research.
You have.
I've got copious notes written down here. Well, you don't even need to do League Two then. I think I've just rounded it up.
Well, it was a great save, because we will get on to League Two, and that save for me, yes, he did get a touch, and that is a save of the week contender. A free kick, top corner. What a save. Preserved a clean sheet as well, because Huddersfield won that game away at Crawley. And we'll stay with League Two just for one moment.
Huddersfield?
Hartlepool.
Yes.
I've restored parity.
I did it just for you, mate. We're just mixing it all together.
I did it just for you. Championship,
League Two.
But Jojo Wallacott.
Yes.
A good double save from Rowan Burns. Not Rowan Burns, Row and Burns.
Ah.
Important, again, at the time, because Swindon sent Scunthorpe for three.
They did indeed, yes. They were two really good saves, actually. I mean, we spoke about Jojo quite a lot on this particular pod, but certainly he's making a real name for himself, both on the international scene and certainly at Swindon.
And we'll finish with Newport 3, Oldham 3. The reason I want to bring this up is because we have had an email in. Now, the Oldham equaliser, Davis Keller-Dunn, The reaction from the defender, Ryan Haynes, who just scored, and I think was a bit big time. Did you notice that? Nick Townsend conceding.
Yeah, I did. And it's brought back bad memories. No, it's that classic one, and I think again you guys will be able to relate to this, where you can see the goal. Look, do I think he could have done a bit more with the goal? I'm pretty sure that he feels he might have been able to do a bit more. It's just one of those. It's quite close in, hasn't been able to get his hands down, it's kind of squirmed under him and gone into the back of the net. Would have been a good save had he have saved it, but certainly I think he would have felt he could have done a bit more. But there's nothing worse than when you then sit up and you see one of your defenders there making it known to the entire crowd it is your fault. You know, arms wide open, looking at you, no doubt with a scowl on his face. What are you doing? And it's just terrible. Because again, vice versa, you don't do that to your players around you. You are teammates. You want to bring out the best of them, and they want to bring out the best of you. It's a real, I'm trying to think of a nice word to use to describe that action, but it is just very much pointing the blame towards a goalkeeper, self-preservation in terms of making it known that it's not your fault. And I just think in terms of a teammate doing that, I certainly would have been saying something afterwards.
Okay, well, there was an email in from Razek Niembro, who has said, "Hello guys, I recently discovered your podcast and I love it. I was born in Mexico City, but now I'm working in Washington, D.C. and I'm also the goalkeeper of the Mexican embassy football team." This gent's got a story, isn't he? Wow. "Since I was a kid, my favourite football club is Oldham Athletic, which means I've suffered a lot. But in the last weeks, Oldham Athletic has won 2 crucial games and I really hope they can stay in League 2. Also, it is worth mentioning that Daniel Rogers is now the first goalkeeper to send Lutweiler, Jason Lutweiler, of course, to the second place, even if he is the sub of the Canadian national team. Any comment on Oldham would be appreciated. Keep up the great work. P.S. Richard, don't be a child the next time you go to an Indian restaurant."
I can't promise that. Look, Oldham, it's...
So Danny Rogers, basically, who's come in as the number one, his first taste of English football. This is a goalkeeper who plied his trade in Scotland for the majority of his career, was at Aberdeen for a long time, barely played, finally released, went to Kilmarnock, I think it was, and then in the summer has come over to Oldham. Started the season at Oldham. Lutweiler was then brought in. They had Laurie Walker as well, didn't they, on an emergency loan for a month. Lutweiler then came in and has played for the majority, but Danny Rogers has come in for the past 4 games, 1-2, I think, and drawn 2. It's an opportunity now, 27 years old, and he's taken it.
Yeah, no, he certainly has. I think that not just Danny Rogers, but there's a lot of goalkeepers that you or we often talk about where it is just getting your foot on the ladder, you know, and you can see goalkeepers that will climb very, very quickly once they do get that taste of league football in England. And it's, and I know that he has sort of built up a obviously a decent CV before in terms of the number of games that he's played, but certainly England's funny. And what I mean by that, there's several good examples at the moment of goalkeepers that got huge reputations elsewhere, but to get yourself into the English league and start to build up, you can see goalkeepers that do it very quickly when they come over and instantly make a name and they climb the levels. But it is one of the hardest things, getting your foot on the rung in English football. So look, you know, huge credit to him. As you mentioned, he's been given his opportunity, certainly taken it, and the upturn in fortunes for Oldham, again, the goalkeeper will obviously play a huge part in that. So a big well done to him, and certainly being, what's he, 27 years old, you say, at the moment, he's still got plenty of time on his side, so certainly one we'll keep an eye on.
Well, it's a misty day out there. Light is shining through the lamppost as Richard Lee is tapping away on the concrete with his shiny shoes and his trench coat and his trilby. He's wearing glasses and he's gone from Hertfordshire this time into Buckinghamshire, North Buckinghamshire. And what are you doing there?
Well, there was a coming together of two big teams in League One.
Very nice.
Yes, it was. The day was very becoming. Does that make sense?
It makes plenty of sense.
What else have we got? Is there anything more I can use? Any other good puns?
Well, you didn't know whether you were coming or going, but nice. That's a bit... that's a rabbit. Yeah, you'll take it?
I'll go with that. Yeah, okay. Yeah. Okay. So, do you want to guess who the goalkeeper
I'm going to guess you were watching the MK Dons number one.
I was indeed. Jamie Cumming. I was watching, well, actually, I was watching the game, it was fair to say. It was a big game in League One. It was a fascinating game for the fact that Ipswich took 7,000 supporters to the game, which made up pretty much 50% of the crowd on the day. So it was a good crowd. But two really good goalkeepers I was really keen to watch. Christian Walton, of course, who's making, well, I say he's already made a name for himself, but certainly the Ipswich fans absolutely adore him, and he was excellent again on the day. But it was good to watch Jamie Cumming at MK, because of course he's playing, it's fair to say, a very different style of football now for MK than he was at Gillingham. Really broke through earlier in the season, and it was a very impressive performance. So initially looking at him, he's obviously a young goalkeeper, but certainly his body language looked very positive, looked very strong. The thing that impressed me most on the day was his decision making. Very intelligent goalkeeper, and what I mean by that is that, of course, you can watch a goalkeeper play and they can have all the attributes and they can be flying around the goal and, you know, all action hero. But he looked very calm in everything he did. He made a couple of very good saves, but it was more the fact that the decisions he was making on the ball ordinarily were the right decision, knowing where to play, when to play, and executing the passes that he were playing as well. There was one really good example, actually. A ball was crossed over to the far post, and you could almost see that as he's coming towards it, he realizes he's not going to be able to hold the ball, so he's going to have to punch. But just even the area in which he punched, it was just a very thought out moment in the game where he's then punched into a really safe area. And again, it was just another example for me of just how calm he is. He did have one or two moments in the first half that weren't so calm. There was a cross that came in that he mishandled, but again was very controlled in order to go and pick up the second ball, didn't get flustered, didn't thrash at it or anything like that. It was one that, you know, didn't quite get the initial action correct, but then recovered very well. So no, on the whole, I have to say, first time I've seen him in the flesh, and certainly a very impressive performance.
I'm just glad you kept the puns clean, to be fair.
Yes, there was a temptation.
But you speak about building CVs as well for goalkeepers. This is a goalkeeper with a bright future, on loan from Chelsea, of course, last season at Stevenage, first half of this season on loan at a struggling Gillingham side, but did very well, and now for the rest of the season at MK Dons.
That's exactly it. You know, we speak of Danny Rogers there, and it's the same in a different context for younger goalkeepers to get your rung on the ladder in league football and to do it at League One level. Of course, last season League Two was Stevenage, now Gillingham, who were struggling as you mentioned, and now MK, who are at the top of League One. It's the perfect pathway. You know, in a perfect world, he finishes the season well and then he's a consideration for the Championship next season on loan, which when you are at a club like Chelsea, you really can play the loan market and you can keep doing it like Nathan Baxter's done. Obviously Jamie Cumming is doing it as well. And then what will end up happening, providing you keep doing well enough, you at some point will find your level. Now, of course, your hope is that level is Chelsea's first team. We haven't seen that yet necessarily from Chelsea to produce a younger goalkeeper to come all the way through. But given that they've got Jamie Cumming doing what he's doing, maybe he'll be that person.
And of course, that was a pair of clean sheets for both of those goalkeepers, which leads us nicely into this.
Clean Sheet Club. And here we are. We are at Matthew Beadle's favourite moment in the show. I wouldn't necessarily say it's mine anymore, but yes, it is time for Clean Sheet Club. And we start in the Premier League. David Rayo, bienvenido. Vicente Guaita, sheets as white as his barnet. Jordan Pickford, 4, and now hoping for more. Robert Sanchez, back from a Boxing Day blank. Edison, 7 in his last 10. Alisson, no, Novo Hamburgo. Martin Dubravka, very much Newcastle's number one. Jose Sarr, enjoying every game. Lee Nichols, seemingly never in a pickle. Wes Fodringham, oh yes, Fodringham. Bradley Collins, guess who's back? Back again. Bradley's back. Tell your friends. Neil Etheridge, off the mark for 21/22. Marek Rodak, doubling up. Dan Iverson, 4 in a row. Sam Johnson, on we go. Thomas Kaminski, fresh out the wash. Owen Evans, tally doubled. Jamie Cumming, MK treble. Christian Walton, row trio. Michael Cooper, account opened in 2022. Gavin Bizzuno, rompy pompy. Cam Dawson, 6-7. James Belshaw, picking up where he left off. Nathan Bishop, another one bagged for the Stags. Ben Killip, 2 from 3. Tom King, 2 in a week. Thomas Holy, valiant effort. Liam Roberts, better call Saul. Jojo Wallacott, first of the year. Carl Rushworth, copycat. Paul Farman, no minutes missed. Christy Pym, keeping it thorough for Borough.
Very good. Just two questions.
Not very good at
all. Who's David Rayo and Gavin Batzuno?
I've done the classic Scorchio. Scorchio. What was that show back in the day?
Well, Scorchio always reminds me of International Superstar Soccer on the N64, I think it was.
Do you know what? Someone's going to be listening in and they'll know exactly the show that I'm thinking. It wasn't Little Britain. It was one of those type shows where you had Spanish weatherman or something from memory, and everything was Scorchio, always Scorchio. But yeah, so I've just changed the A's for O's and a lot, to be honest. I don't know what, I even read out the year 21-22 as 21/22. So the thing is, for those that don't know, so Matthew writes this and always tells me just to read it out, not to pause. If I make mistakes, just carry on.
Just can't, yeah, take a deep breath. It's all fine. It all adds to it.
Well, I'm not sure it does. I think it's getting worse and worse. I mean, there's a few there. You've thrown in so many this week.
The season 21/22. A nice little musical reference, though. You got that.
Go on,
which
one?
The Bradley Collins one.
Which was?
Guess he's back. Back again.
Back again. Yeah, Eminem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
An homage to what was an epic halftime Super Bowl entertainment. Yeah, yes. Brilliant stuff. The Clean Sheet Club table.
Yes.
By the way, 32 clean sheets in total. This week.
A lot of clean sheets.
Wow. Top of the pile.
Go on.
Liam Roberts with 15 in 30. And then in second place, we have two goalkeepers, Edison and Luke McGee with 14, but Edison in 24 and Luke McGee in 30. And then picking up the rear with 13, Ross Doohan and Lee Nichols doing in 25 and Nichols in 30.
Very good.
So it's all very, very gritty.
Top of the pile. Is that the first time he's been top on his own?
I think it is, yes. He was level with Luke McGee this time last week, but two games, of course. There was the midweek games and then the weekend games, so he's out on his own.
There you go. Big word on to him.
Well, 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 if it isn't a keeper caper.
More keeper capers, but a different jingle, because we've already done one for Bree Samba.
Mm.
Variety. On the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
We've got more. If there was another one, do we have like a third?
We do have a third.
Do we?
Yeah, we do. Not as good.
Right.
But still, okay. So we've got a few of these. The first one is going to be from the Romanian top flight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is Justin Popescu, who blasted a goal kick sideways at his teammate Adrian Scarlatacci. It's cannoned off his heel, gone into the back of the net.
Mm.
But it's not been given. Rolling ball, I believe that's called.
Rolling ball. Mm. Yes, it was still moving. But I mean, just a bizarre sequence. If you haven't seen this, do log on and see it. I just can't figure out what he's thinking. So I get that he's obviously trying to play it out to the fullback, but you have somebody in the way and they're not that far away. They're like 2 yards away from you. And he has just... I mean, I feel quite sorry for the defender here because he actually tries to jump out the way, but it's just too late. He just fires the ball straight into him and it then rebounds into the net. And this is in the top division in Romania. This isn't like an amateur game. This is a top division in Romania. It's just a really bizarre moment. And you can imagine the other team are a little bit upset because they cannot understand why it isn't a goal. I mean, by the letter of the law, the ball is moving when he's hit it. So I do get it, but just a bizarre sequence.
The other keeper caper involves an ex-Arsenal goalkeeper, Emiliano Viviano. Now, he was playing for Fatih Karagümrük and they were playing Konyaspor in the Turkish Cup. Quite remarkable scenes, these, because the temperatures were low and he was freezing, visibly freezing. I've never seen anything like this before.
No, and it was deep into extra time, I think, wasn't it? I think it was like the 110th minute or something. And yeah, he was visibly shaking. Watching this, like, people always ask me, do I miss playing? And there's parts of it, of course, you miss, but I did not miss this. I remember playing at Swindon on a Tuesday night, feeling like this when my hands had gone numb, like half an hour into the game, hands and feet were numb, knowing that it was going to be a 90-minute game of football. There's not a lot you can do at that point. You know, you get in at half time, you try and warm your feet up, warm your hands up, but 5 minutes into the second half and they're numb again. So, yeah, watching this brought back a couple of memories. I don't think I've ever played in conditions quite that bad, but it's just a nightmare for a goalkeeper. And this is the bit that I don't think is fully appreciated. We spoke earlier in the pod about Hugo Lloris, and you could see that the conditions weren't great. But of course, commentators watching won't fully appreciate what impact that can have on a goalkeeper. Whereas if you play in La Liga, then ordinarily, on average, the temperatures are going to be that bit higher, the conditions are going to be that bit better, which does make it easier for a goalkeeper. But yeah, I certainly felt for him. Horrible, horrible day to play football.
A few more bits. I'd like to hear the goalkeeper assist klaxon, please. A game in Serie A over in Italy. Milan, AC Milan beating Sampdoria 1-0 to go top of the table. And Mike Maignan, the Milan goalkeeper, 76.58 metres this assist. What an assist. What a goal.
Yeah, absolutely. Lovely kick of the football. It really was. And actually, credit to the winger or the striker.
Rafael Leao was the player, yeah.
Okay, credit to him. I mean, I don't need to know the outfield players' names, but no, credit to him. Very good. He then showed pace in order to beat his man, cut inside, lovely finish. But yeah, it was a fantastic ball.
The last assist in Serie A for an AC Milan goalkeeper was all the way back in 2006.
Really?
That goalkeeper would have been...
Ooh, Dida.
Correct, yes. Richard. Wowza Rooney's, he's got one.
Look at that.
Can you believe it? And just a couple more over in Scotland. Craig Sampson, who's gone in at Aberdeen in quite remarkable, very different circumstances here.
Well, I mean, look, we've spoke about this quite a bit recently, about the importance of a number three, having a good squad of goalkeepers now, where I think certainly with COVID playing havoc like it has done this season. But I do think we're going to see it more and more, that clubs are going to need more and more goalkeepers, because there's been so many examples of this. But what do you do if you haven't got a sub goalkeeper? Then you either go without a sub on the bench, but of course there's the worry that your number one's then going to get targeted in that game, which can happen, knowing that if you have to sub and you have to put an outfield player in goal, that could effectively forfeit the game. So yeah, you know, and I've heard of this once or twice before, where then a coach, realistically, this is the one that I do think this, like, would you be better off having an outfield player on the bench that fills in for a goalkeeper, or for instance, someone like me right now? And I'm not, by the way, I'm definitely not offering.
Oh, crikey, no.
I'm not offering
anyone
my services.
Listening.
I am not. I'm definitely, but my point being, and in fact, I did this. So I played the game for, who was it I played for?
Can't even remember who you
Dunstable,
played for.
Dunstable. There you go. So I played a game, and I hadn't put on a pair of gloves for 2 years, and I played a game for Dunstable, and I did okay. I made 4 or 5 saves, and we lost the game, but I did okay. But then I guess the question is, does it make sense for me to play that game, or if they would have had to put a centre-back in goal for the game? Like, of course it would still make sense, even though I hadn't played for 2 years, to do that. So a situation like this, to me, makes sense, where, yes, he hasn't played for 4 years, been retired for 4 years. The chances that he's going to be needed are unlikely. No doubt he can do a few days training before, and I'm sure he's kept himself fit, because he is still a goalkeeper coach of a very, very high level. So I kind of get it. But it's not ideal. In a perfect world, you'd have enough senior goalkeepers that you would never really have a situation like this. But yeah, sometimes needs must.
The beauty of this, though, is that he wasn't even at the club until a few days prior to the game, and was brought in not to be a cover for goalkeeping, not to be a number two, a number three, a number four. He was brought in because Gordon Marshall, the goalkeeper coach at Aberdeen, is taking some time out. So he was brought in as an interim goalkeeper coach, and all of a sudden he's putting pen to paper on an emergency deal.
Yeah.
4 years after retiring.
It is bizarre. It's the kind of thing where you do just wonder if it's meant to be, that suddenly you get, you know, you come on in the fifth minute or something, and look, it's a huge game. It's a huge club, Aberdeen. Like, yeah, imagine that suddenly you are then you are playing a game or two of that magnitude. It's the kind of thing that even now, I'm sure a lot of ex-goalkeepers will also experience this, where I still wake up sometimes and think that I'm still playing. So like, I'll wake up sometimes and think I have a game. You know, I'll have had a dream in the night, and I'll literally wake up and think, right, I've got to prepare for my game today. Then obviously give it a minute or two, I come to and I realise, no, I retired 7 years ago. But I still get it even now. So it is kind of one of those moments where you've been retired for a long time and then suddenly you're not retired anymore. Does that make sense? It's a weird...
It does, but so when you wake up, I know you say it's a minute, I get it. Sometimes you have a dream and you wake up and you think, oh my goodness, I haven't done my homework.
Yeah.
You know, but do you have a weird feeling then? Do you have nerves?
Do
you have excitement?
Nerves. Yeah, I wake up with exactly the same nerves and the feeling of, okay, big game today. And then, as I say, give it a minute or so, I'm like, what is going on? Like, what? I've definitely retired a long, long time ago. But yeah, I have that so regularly, even now. And I'm sure, if I know that a lot of ex-goalkeepers have it, because I spoke to a few about it, where you still, and of course, if you've done it for, you know, in my case, 20 odd years of experiencing that feeling every Saturday, Sunday, yeah, it's naturally still going to be within you, I guess, somewhere. So, yeah, but I sort of see a situation like this, and you do sometimes think, you know, that you just never know what situation might occur where suddenly you are back in the firing line. And imagine you go from a week ago not even considering something like this to him potentially playing in front of 10, 15, 20,000 people. Like, yes, yeah, so bizarre to think.
If a club came in for you, League Two, if a club came to you and said, Rich, we desperately need you to sit on the bench for a couple of games because we are in crisis, would you back yourself?
I'd back myself. Even now, I've kept myself in reasonably okay condition. If anything, I'm probably stronger now than when I played physically, because I struggled a lot with my shoulders and what have you. But no, I wouldn't now. Like, I think I would do everything I possibly could to find them a solution, because I think there are plenty of solutions out there. And obviously, that's what I do now with a lot of clubs, is try and help them in situations like this where potentially you can get someone on a very short-term deal that can do that. But no, the idea of doing it myself now, more for the fact, and this is, I even had it when I played for Dunstable. I was as nervous as I was playing for Watford in some of the big games I played for Watford and Brentford, because I think if anything, you get more nervous when you don't feel you're maybe quite ready for the task at hand. You know, it's the whole sort of fight or flight that's within you. So when I went and played that game for Dunstable, feeling so unprepared was why I felt quite nervous, even though the crowd was very small on the night. And, you know, in the grand scheme of things, it was quite a small game. But obviously, if you don't quite feel you're prepared, it's not a particularly nice feeling.
Lovely stuff. We'll finish on Kepa, just to finish, because he was ousted. Bit harsh to say that. Obviously, we've spoken a lot about the relationship that Thomas Tuchel has developed with Kepa and Edouard Mendy. Kepa has been in because Mendy's been at AFCON. He's filled in for him at the Club World Cup, which Chelsea have won. Played the semi-final against Al Hilal. Very good performance there. But Mendy returned and played in the final against Palmeiras.
He did, yeah. And look, credit to Kepa, because I thought he was excellent. Certainly the couple of the saves he made later on in the game, very good. The Kepa spread, he's got a certain technique when he spreads, and it's very, very effective, very flexible, makes a lot of saves doing it. And the save he made, full stretch to his left, I thought was excellent. Really quick feet, spring, lovely shot when he actually makes the save. It's the kind of one that I'm sure there is a photo somewhere of him full stretch making it. You know, really, really good save. So he'd have felt a little bit hard done by not to have played the final. But certainly what I liked about it was when they did win and they're celebrating, he looked like he was really enjoying it with them, which he should. You know, they are forming a really, really strong goalkeeping bond between Kepa and Mendy. It's a really good competition. The only thing that hangs over Kepa's head, and probably shouldn't, but is the price tag. Because again, he wasn't brought in to be a number two for that amount of money. But actually, if you take the price tag out of it, and you just, I know we said it in the last pod, but just to reiterate, you look at a number one and two, Mendy and Kepa, it's amongst the best. Really good competition, both playing exceptionally well, really valued by their manager. It is a really content goalkeeping department.
As Jesse J once said, mate, forget about the price tag.
There you go. There you go. Another nice music reference to finish things off. Excellent, Matthew.
Richard, thank you. This has been quite bumper. I think this is the longest ever Between the Sticks we've done.
I think it could well be. This has been a bumper episode.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast, Between the Sticks. Keepers away.